This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca, iTunes, and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
Aboriginal peoples are among the poorest in Canada. Now a recent study by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives confirms that Aboriginal peoples also experience far greater income inequality than the rest of Canadians. They experience significantly higher rates of unemployment and lower rates of educational attainment than the rest of Canadians. And they experience higher rates of suicide, substance abuse, imprisonment, and other social ills. This comes at enormous cost, both social and economic, to Aboriginal peoples and to Canada generally. I'm joined on the phone by Daniel Wilson, who is one of the authors of the study. Welcome to People First Radio, Daniel.
Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Daniel, this paper is the first of its kind. It's described as breaking new ground. In what way is this new research?
Well, we were able for the first time to look at census results and the income data over 3 points in time, which had not been available prior to now. So no one's actually taken a look at incomes for First Nation, Inuit, and Métis peoples over a span of time and been able to look at the trends developing. So what we did was calculated the differences at the points in time, 1996, the 2001 and 2006 census figures, and were able to identify that although there's been some slow growth in comparison of Aboriginal and non-Aboriginal incomes, there's Aboriginal people still only earn 70 cents on the dollar that other people in Canada are earning. And it would take approximately 63 years at the current rate of growth for that gap to be closed.
The paper states that similar to criticisms aimed at Atlantic Canadians, whose own low employment rates and higher poverty have been attributed to geographic location and a local so-called culture of dependency, it sometimes is suggested that because First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people choose to live where there is little employment and have come to rely on government support for survival, they bring poverty upon themselves. And a related notion is that this situation is exacerbated on First Nation reserves. Now, I drew this commentary from the report. I'm wondering if you could elaborate on that.
Yeah, absolutely. What we, you know, I think we've all heard or read in media people commenting that, well, the answer to Aboriginal poverty or income inequity is that they need to get off reserves or get out of rural and isolated communities and move to the cities. And what we were able to do through digging through all of the data that was available to us was compare like with like. And so we took a look at what Aboriginal people and non-Aboriginal people were earning in major city centers across the country, in rural communities, and on and off reserve. And what we found is that this income inequity that we've identified doesn't disappear no matter where you're looking at people. In fact, it's quite persistent in all three of those kinds of communities and in every province across the country.
In a portion of the study titled, "Is Education the Silver Bullet?" poses that question. You write, "It has become increasingly popular to suggest that in order to overcome poverty, Aboriginal people only need to stay in school longer. Is education the silver bullet?"
Clearly not. Again, what we were able to do by looking at all of the data available was compare First Nation, Inuit, and Métis people at the different levels of education with non-Aboriginal Canadians. And so when you look at people who don't have a high school diploma with others who don't have a high school diploma, that difference still persists. And the same is true when they have a trade certificate or a college diploma. Interestingly, though, you do see when people get a bachelor or master's degree that the income inequality pretty much fades away. It's quite small for Aboriginal men versus non-Aboriginal men, and it's actually reversed now for Aboriginal women who are earning, on the average, more than non-Aboriginal women when they have a bachelor or master's degree.
Daniel, the paper states, as we've discussed, that the results show significant and troubling levels of income inequality, but adds that the results also offer clues to policy interventions that could help close the gap between Aboriginal peoples and the rest of Canadians, and also help wipe out poverty for Aboriginal peoples within our lifetime. Tell us more about those policy clues.
You know, as we were saying, although, you know, education won't solve all of the problems, it certainly is one step, you know, where we see the income gap disappear at university level, that would suggest that what we need to do is ensure that the doors of universities are more welcoming to First Nation, Inuit, and Métis students, because that's certainly a key factor, although it is not everything. What we also see, though, when we're able to eliminate the other explanations that you hear about, like location and like education, that you're left with the fact of 200 years of discrimination in the country and the effects of that. So, you know, part of the solution has to lie in recognizing the historical impact that colonialism has had on Aboriginal peoples. Many people can't get access to university, let alone a good-paying job, when they're simply struggling with the most basic challenges of life, access to shelter, clean water, nutrition. And if those basics aren't assured, then it really works against the chances of Aboriginal peoples. Moreover, you know, those same policies of assimilation, including residential schools, have had a negative effect on Aboriginal people's self-confidence and their ability to compete. And the same policies have had a real negative effect on the perceptions of non-Aboriginal Canadians vis-a-vis Aboriginal people. And so you see that income discrimination continuing to exist. It's clearly the workplace is not overcoming those negative perceptions. And, you know, there are plenty of studies and reports that have recommended federal government action on all of these issues. But they haven't acted in a concerted fashion to tackle the problem. And what there's a desperate need for a plan that's been constructed side by side with Aboriginal peoples to overcome the harm done over centuries of discrimination and reconcile the two communities. After generations of wrong-headed actions, it's the only way to correct the direction.
You're listening to People First Radio. I'm Kevin. Income inequality between Aboriginal peoples and the rest of Canadians is stubbornly high, according to a groundbreaking new study by the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. For every dollar non-Aboriginals earned in 2006, Aboriginal peoples earned only 70 cents, a slight narrowing from 1996, when it was 56 cents for every dollar. Co-authors Daniel Wilson and David McDonald studied 2006 census data to quantify, for the first time ever, the Aboriginal income gap in Canada. And Daniel Wilson is on the phone with us. And in your conclusion, in fact, you write, quote, "To achieve this change, Canada must truly accept that First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people are equal and treat them with equal respect both as human beings and for the legal rights which pertain uniquely to Aboriginal peoples." Now, I want to just jump ahead and in a sense, repeat what you already brought up, and that is, according to the paper, an abundance of studies recommend alternative approaches to existing economic development policies. And I'm wondering, in the last couple of moments here, if you could just elaborate a little further on what you're describing as a side-by-side kind of exchange or relationship.
Sure. Well, you know, I guess at the broadest level, one can say that, you know, if you're going to reconcile the two communities, non-Aboriginal and Aboriginal Canada, then each has to treat the other with full respect. And, you know, you can go back 14 years now to the release of the report of the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples. You can look at 15 years of work that the Harvard Project on the American Indian has done. You can look at what the United Nations Development Program has done with other colonial communities across the country, or across the world, sorry. And you can identify commonalities in terms of the approach. And what they all boil down to, really, is ensuring that the capacity exists for people to determine their own futures and that they are given the freedom to do so, that they're treated, you know, with the respect and given the liberty to actually find the way forward. And I think what that points to in Canada in particular is the impact of the Indian Act and the paternalist approach that Canada has taken with regard to First Nations people, and the need to simply take a step away from that, from generations of that approach, and engage on a nation-to-nation basis, you know, with the appropriate supports in place, in order to ensure that people can identify and implement solutions around economic development and around the empowerment of individuals within the communities on a local level where answers are best placed.
Daniel, we have just a moment, short moment left. Is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation today?
Well, I think, you know, while we certainly we're troubled by the continuing gap in income disparity, and you know, it's worth reminding people that that there's an income inequality within the Canadian populace overall that's at a 30-year high, and the Growing Gap project from the Canadian Center on Policy Alternatives is exploring a variety of those elements. That with regard to the particular circumstances of First Nation, Inuit, and Métis peoples in Canada, that there is reason for hope here, that there are solutions on the ground, and you can see plenty of places where a change and a difference is really being made. And so, although it is a negative finding that it's still only 70 cents on a dollar and another 60 years before it goes away, I think it's really important to remember that there are signs of hope here, in particular the ones that we've highlighted around university-educated people, and that if people can come together, I think we can actually eliminate these kinds of inequities in a lot shorter period of time than we estimate what it would take if action isn't taken.
Thanks very much for taking the time to join us on the phone today.
Thank you.
Daniel Wilson is a researcher of Mi'kmaq, Acadian, and Irish heritage who previously worked for the Assembly of First Nations. He co-authored a recent study for the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives called The Income Gap Between Aboriginal Peoples and the Rest of Canada. You can find that study online at policyalternatives.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Centre Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.